At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk, and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family, and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. The first topic today is leukemia with Dr. Juho Jalkanen of Faron Pharmaceutical.
So we're not toxic like conventional chemo. We just play with the immune system. We make the immune system recognize cancer and attack cancer.
They are currently working on immunotherapy drugs to help with leukemia. Then something less serious, but a problem to everyone at some point.
I hear a lot about putting onions in socks. I've had a few friends suggest it. I've seen it online. I see it everywhere.
It's the common cold with Dr. Sarah Kaya, and ways to make the experience less annoying. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Dr. Juho Jalkanen is a vascular surgeon and a CEO of Faron Pharmaceuticals, and they are looking for cures to leukemia. I started off my chat with him by saying that it sounds like he's got 2 full-time jobs.
Yeah, unfortunately for the CEO job, I had to leave my practice in vascular surgery, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. So no, that's what you're concentrating on, CEO of Faron Pharmaceuticals.
It's a 24/7 job, being a CEO.
Well, you don't look too tired. You must be getting a little bit of sleep.
Thanks. And with 5 kids at home, you
should. All right. Well, look, let's move on. So Faron is right now involved with some trials on a drug to help with leukemia. But first of all, let me just ask you a little bit about leukemia, because it's a disease that kind of everyone's heard of, but I suspect a lot of us, me included, don't really know what it is. So let's start with something very basic. Kind of what, tell us about leukemia and what it is and what it does to you.
Yeah, it affects so many of us. Every 25 seconds, basically, somebody is diagnosed with leukemia. So it's blood cancer. Our blood cells are generated from the bone marrow. And the problem in leukemia is, instead of the bone marrow producing healthy blood cells like red blood cells or white blood cells to fight infections, it produces cancerous cells. And we don't have any healthy red blood cells, so we're anemic. We don't have healthy white blood cells, so that's why we get a lot of infections. So we're very ill. And the bone marrow...
The white blood cells are very much part of the immune system, yeah?
Exactly.
Okay.
And fighting infections. And fighting cancer as well. So yeah. The bone marrow just produces these cancerous cells, and eventually we die of these side effects of illness, of anemia, infections, and so forth. Or actually, you know, bleedings, because thrombocytes are also an important cell type.
And that's something that causes blood to clot, is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So are there different types of leukemia? Because, there are different cancers. It's very complicated. There are lots of different types. Are there many different types of leukemia?
Yes, there are, because it's depending on which of these cell types kind of goes crazy and takes over the bone marrow and then over in the blood. So it's the types of leukemia depends on the types of cells that basically go crazy and become cancerous.
Okay. So leukemia is kind of a coverall for a few different diseases, really.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. And my initial thought actually was that leukemia tends to be a childhood disease. Is that because we just hear about it more in children, or actually is it more of a childhood disease?
It's both. Certain types of leukemia are very childhood focused. And actually, the great thing is they usually can't be cured, which is, you know, the best thing ever. So childhood leukemia is pretty well curable nowadays. But then there's certain forms that are, as we get older, we tend to get cancer, and certain forms tend toward that way. And unfortunately, the treatment options there are pretty poor still.
Okay. So if you get leukemia as an older person, this is more serious. Well, it's serious whether you're young or not. But
the availability, for example, the cure for leukemia is a bone marrow transplant. To be eligible for a transplant, you have to get the disease into remission. You have to do intensive chemo, and elderly patients can always tolerate that. Kids can. So bone marrow transplants, you know, usually if there's available transplant, good for kids. For the elderly, you might actually die of the side effects. Sorry to say. Oh,
goodness. All right. Earlier in the chat, you kind of hinted at just how common leukemia is. Have you got any statistics for that?
Yeah, leukemia is very common. The broad umbrella of leukemia, like I mentioned, every 25 seconds, somebody, you know, is diagnosed with leukemia. Millions of patients suffer from it. And then again,
this
is
worldwide, is it? This 25 seconds.
It is worldwide, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a lot of people. And does it tend to be a developed country disease, or is it, you know, anyone can get it?
Anyone can get it, and it's the classical stuff. You can, you know, drive sales crazy, alcohol, cigarettes, pollution, aging is a big, and especially for the Western countries with aging populations, the forms of leukemia in the older age are getting more and more prevalent.
Okay. But so you guys have developed a drug which you're hoping is going to help with some of this. And in fact, you're doing some trials right now. Is that right?
Correct. We currently are doing a phase 2 trial. It's running in the US and in Finland. And we just actually are opening up the UK, which would be great for UK patients as well. And we're treating, like I mentioned, the form of leukemia, usually with the elderly patients, which cannot stand intensive chemo and poor treatment options available. Because we're dealing with the immune system. We get the immune system to attack the cancer. So we're not a toxic drug. We're not like chemo or radiation and those conventional treatments.
I'm going to come on to that, and I'm going to ask you some questions about how the drug works, which you'll have to explain to me very carefully, because I'm not a scientist or a medical person. But first of all, you mentioned that we're on phase 2 testing. What does that mean, and how kind of long out of the lab is this drug?
So, okay, great question. A lot of science goes behind this. We've been working with this cell type and target for 20 years, but we're closing to the finish line now. So it can be, you know, many years of preclinical, then you go into the clinic, and clinical stages are from phase 1 to 3. Now phase 2 is coming to its end. So we're towards the late stage of development. Usually still the last phase 3 studies can take 2 to 3 years easily. But since we're treating a population that's treatment resistant and has basically no options, there's accelerated approval possibility even after phase 2 with this one. So okay, we're nearing the, you know, the point of, you know, it's such an exciting year ahead for us as a company.
Yeah. Right. Well, two things. You're getting so close to the end to figuring out or proving that it really does work after 20 years of hard slog. Exactly. Good luck. I hope it all works out. because that's a lot of work to get this far and it and not to be a success.
Well, it sure looks like it's working, so we're pretty optimistic and comfortable with it.
Good. And so phase two trials, how many patients are actually undergoing these trials? How many people has it been sort of used on at the moment?
So altogether, we've treated over 250 patients. So the phase twos are in the tens and hundreds of patients, and then phase threes are in the hundreds, several hundreds of patients. And as mentioned, so far we've treated over 250 patients.
Okay. And then how long ago did these phases start? You know, when did you start trying it with people?
We started clinical development in 2019. So it's closing up to, it's been 4 years now.
Okay. This is, it just shows what an amazing investment in time and money and you know, people, because, you know, people will have been working on this. You know, you're a surgeon, you're not a surgeon anymore, you know, it's because you're doing this. This is a massive investment. So
I can say it takes so much time and energy. And I just have to, since you brought that up, I have to say we're down to the second generation doing this. My parents were the scientific founders of the company. My mother was the professor of immunology in the local university. So we're down to the second generation doing this. That's how much it takes.
All right, so we're rooting for you here. We're rooting for
you.
Thank you. Right, so we got an idea. You've given a good idea of the development of this drug, where we are now, and sort of the process. Let me ask you some questions on how the thing actually works. What does the drug actually do that specific to leukemia that helps? So a warning once again, you know, I am not a medical guy, so you're going to have to break this down into a good, simple story.
No problem. I think I got it. So like I mentioned, there's different forms of leukemia depending on which cell type goes crazy. And we target a specific cell type named the monocyte or macrophage. And the purpose of a macrophage is actually, as a part of the immune system, is to go around and eat foreign matter, you know, bacteria, cancer, foreign matter in the human body, and then present that to the immune system. Hey, there's something foreign that needs to be killed. Go kill it.
So now, is this macrophage a type of white blood cell?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's kind of the type of white blood cell that guides the immune system. Again, it's like, look, I found something, go and kill it. And then the soldiers are the T cells. The T cells then go and kill. But somebody needs to guide them. And that's the purpose of the macrophage. Now, the target on the macrophage is called CLEVER-1. It's a checkpoint. Basically, it's a scavenger receptor. It's what the macrophages uses to eat stuff with. And the problem here, now what's happened is that the CLEVER-1 positive macrophage doesn't present what it eats. So that's why the cancer can just grow without the immune system recognizing it. But when you hit CLEVER-1 with our drug, and the drug is called Bexmarilimab, I'm going to call it Bex, from here on. So when you target macrophages with Bex, instead of hiding the tumor, it starts presenting the tumor and reveals it to the immune system. So now the immune system can go and attack it. So
okay. let me just stop you and rewind a little bit. So this CLEVER-1, that is something that the cancer uses to not be detected, to kind of sneak under the immune system.
Exactly. And it enables it to just grow without being noticed.
Right. So you developed a drug that latches on in some way to CLEVER-1 and kind of stops it from working. So the that the cancer is stopping, it stops the cancer hiding. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay.
The cancer cannot hide anymore from the immune system. And then even now the macrophage that was hiding it now suddenly presents it to the T cells, to the army, and the army attacks the cancer. So we're not toxic like conventional chemo. We just play with the immune system. We make the immune system recognize cancer and attack cancer.
Goodness me. So, okay. So it's we're using the immune system exactly as it was designed to be used.
Exactly.
Excellent. All right. So I hadn't thought about that. So, so there's no toxicity. So patients don't go through the, you know, losing the hair and all this kind of difficult stuff.
Exactly. There's no drug that doesn't have any toxicity. What we've seen with the drug that sometimes, but only in, again, in those 250 patients, in 6% of patients, so pretty, it's pretty rare, the immune system may overattack. But they've been well managed, taking the patient then off the drug. But this is, you know, pretty rare, but that can happen, that we go into overdrive, but then, you know, take them off the drug and so forth. But you don't lose hair. We're not going to be, you know, causing anemia ourselves or stuff like that. It's very well tolerated compared to conventional cancer treatments.
Yeah, this sounds like a big plus. Now,
yeah.
Everyone is different and has a different immune system that will react in different ways. That's why some people, you know, survive diseases and others don't. Do you have any idea from these 250 patients, or are you getting an idea, the sort of patient that this drug might work with? Because, you know, obviously there's no point giving it to all patients if it doesn't work for everyone. It's just,
exactly,
you know, false hope or whatever.
Exactly. So in these clinical trials, we've been running the most important learning. This is actually isn't rocket science. The most important learning is that the patient has to have these clever one positive macrophages. So we've done these clinical trials in 10 different cancer types, be it gastric, liver, breast, now in leukemia. What we found, or the most important learning, is the patient has to have these clever one positive macrophages. We can look at them, you know, in a basic tumor biopsy under the microscope. They have them, okay, treat them. Now in leukemia, where we're currently, the phase two is, these macrophages are the cell type that have gone crazy. So basically everybody is clever one positive. This seems to fit, you know, treat everybody. Our response rate in treatment resistance myeloid or macrophage leukemia is 80%. So the vast majority of otherwise treatment resistant patients is now responding to this treatment. But again, everybody's basically clever one positive.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Now, you mentioned something else there, which made me think, is this drug appropriate for other types of cancer?
Multiple types of cancer. And we've, you know, done our a reasonable amount of biobank screening of which cancers carry this. Again, and as mentioned, the lead indication is in a leukemia form where these cells have gone crazy. But across the board, through biobank screenings, 20 to 30% of all cancer patients have this problem. So it's huge, thinking that we could possibly help 20 to 30% of all cancer patients solving this problem, making, you know, revealing the tumor to the immune system.
Okay. Could you even use it as potentially a vaccine against cancer?
You said you're not a scientist, but yes, you can, because the thing is, we're going to now be, the purpose of how vaccines work is you present something, you present an infectious disease to the immune system, a little amount. That's how a vaccine basically works. We're doing the same thing through these macrophages. We're presenting something that needs to be killed by the immune system.
Okay. Well, sometimes people ask me if I'm a scientist, and I'm not. I just say I'm a scientist by marriage. My wife is a scientist. So I suffer from the issue of a little knowledge being a very dangerous thing.
Sometimes it's a blessing.
But this is very interesting. But this idea of using it as a potential vaccine, would this, and in fact, this goes back to really the work you're doing now with the trials. Will the drug actually cure the cancer or just stop it? Will you then have to take this drug forever?
The vision is actually that then the tumor would be recognized that you could stop and you would be cancer free. That's kind of the vision, the big plan. And we've seen that to some extent, but a bit too early to see, you know, how far it lasts, how far you can take that. We're a bit too early still to say, you know.
Okay. So there's essentially a fair amount of work to do yet, because you've got the next phase of trials anyhow.
That's drug development. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But, again, just, you know, getting first approval here, then working on other cancers, that's how we see we'll progress as a company.
Sure. Do you have a feel for how long the phase three trials may take? Or is that an impossible question?
It depends on the cancer. So actually, we already got FDA, you know, which is the number one health authority basically on the planet, already said for this specific treatment resistance leukemia form we're treating currently in the phase two, since there's nothing available after this, we may even get approval with phase two, not needing a phase three. So that's how, you know, fast it could go in a cancer without treatment options. For other cancers where there's treatment options, a randomized, you know, trial comparing the treatment to something is what a phase three would be, and it usually takes 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. No, I mean, and they are massive. That's when it starts to get really expensive, isn't
that's
it?
That's when it's really expensive. That's usually when big pharma also joins the game.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Right. So a completely probably unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway, because I've spoken to some people that have been developing drugs and using essentially AI, artificial intelligence, to model how different molecules fit together and may turn off the functioning of things. Is this something that you've done, or something that you might be able to do in the future to help with this drug and other cancers?
Excellent question. It's going to be a slightly long answer, but first of all, we rely on deep understanding of the biology we're dealing with. So for Bex, the current drug, we're talking about no AI, just deep decades understanding of the biology. And the problem, you know, trying to teach AI biology is that, unfortunately, a big amount of scientific publications you try to teach the AI on are rubbish. So, sorry, you can ask your wife about that. But we are, you know, structures, molecule linkage, structure like that, that's where AI works. And currently, this is an IV infusion drug, a small molecule or so-called a pill. That's where we're using AI to model what the next generation drug against CLEVER-1 would be as a pill. That's where we're using AI.
Okay. Very interesting. All right. So now, if people are listening to this, and two things really, are you looking for patients that are unfortunate enough to have leukemia that would like to be involved in a trial, or do you have enough patients to kind of get involved?
We're here to help and try to actually give a new possibility for these treatments which are out of treatment options. So that's why we're coming to the UK with our trial, because we got a UK employees. We're actually listed in the London Stock Exchange. UK is like a second home to us, even though we're out of Finland originally. So that's why we want to provide this possibility for patients. It's not like us getting those patients, actually us giving back and giving this opportunity for something that might help.
Okay. All right. So you don't want to be called by patients just now?
They're supposed to call their doctors, not the company. The company cannot guide or give it.
Sure. Okay.
Physicians know the clinical trials that are, and then can refer to a clinical trial site.
All right. No, that's I get it.
Kind of how it works.
Yeah. It probably wouldn't be ethical to do what I was suggesting. All right. And then if people want thinking, goodness, you know, this is fabulously interesting, not necessarily scientific people, but just people that are interested and want to find out a bit more how it all works. And you kind of point them to a potential source that regular people like me can kind of get to grips with?
Well, the first place you should go is to our website, Faron.com, Faron.com. That's, you know, still, you can then link to the scientific publications if you're into that. There's more kind of layman also information available on the website on all of this.
Okay. Yeah, the layman information was what I really was talking about there. And also, if scientists are listening, they can go to your website and, you know, find the published papers and pore over them. Good. All right. Well, look, you know, thank you so much for talking. I wish you luck. You know, this is at the end of a very long journey. So I hope the rest of the journey sort of goes smoothly and is successful.
Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Mike.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Before I introduce my next guest, I'd just like to remind you of my book. It's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. It's based on the expertise of many of the guests that have been on the show, and it's a great read for anyone at all interested in health, and it's available on Kindle and Amazon. Now, my next guest, Dr. Sarah Kyatt, she's a GP, and the topic is coughs and colds, which many of us may be suffering from at this time of year in the depths of winter. My first question to her was, have you suffered more patients suffering from these things because of the time of year?
Yeah, it does always happen around this time of the year. Just as the weather starts to change, we get that influx of people. And it's largely because when the weather changes, we tend to spend more time indoors, in closer confines, and we're therefore more likely to catch things from others rather than when all the windows are open and we're out frolicking in the greens.
So it's not because we're colder, it's just because we're not out frolicking.
We need to do more frolicking, absolutely. There's some research to suggest that when you are cold, you may be more prone to your immune system not reacting as well as we'd like to the cold, but you still need to have that virus attack you. So even though often there's that old wives' tale of you can't go outside in the cold, you'll catch a cold. You can't catch a cold from the cold, but There is something to say that actually when you are in the cold, all your blood vessels around the nose and things like that all start to constrict. And that can mean that our defences are less able to combat the cold when we do get one.
But it's still better just to put a coat on or an extra vest or something and go outside.
Oh, absolutely. I am a big fan of the great outdoors, not only to help your physical health, but your mental health as well. And all of these tie in to a brilliant immune system too.
So even if we've done all that and we're unlucky and a virus sneaks in, kind of realistically, though, there's not a whole lot you can do for us, is there? When patients come to you, in fact, it might be better if they kind of didn't come to you and went straight to go and see a pharmacist, because you know, you guys, you're a scarce resource, you got lots of other things to worry about. Wouldn't that just be better for everyone?
Well, I think what you can do is home remedies first. I think there are lots of home remedies, which I'm happy to go through, that you can try and help to manage a cold at home. And then when that's not working, you go to the pharmacy, you see what they can offer. And then as your last option, if things aren't getting better, if it's getting worse indeed, if you're feverish, you know, if you're feeling particularly unwell, then yes, absolutely, we're here for you.
Okay, let's talk about some of these home remedies, because... Well, my wife makes me do revolting things. She makes me gargle with turmeric and salt, which is disgusting. but I have to admit, after being married for 30 years, it does work. So I begrudgingly do it. And she says, look, I told you it works. But I'm quite sure there's absolutely no research to prove that. But what you tell me if there's any different.
I mean, in terms of turmeric, we know it's an anti-inflammatory, so that might certainly help with the inflammatory aspect of things. The salt can work as an antiseptic type of thing, you know, antibacterial, antiviral. So there is some sense behind what she's doing, however revolting it might be. And what I would say is, you know, first and foremost, rest. We find it very difficult in the UK to rest sometimes, and especially when, you know, it's just the cold, you kind of think, oh, I should just power through things. And I get that. You know, a lot of the time we do still need to go to work, you look after our kids, all of those things. But when possible, take that time to rest, allow your body to recuperate and recover. I also think it's really important to drink lots of water. And, you know, we always say drink 6 to 8 glasses of water a day, and actually There are a few studies that actually say that's the exact amount that you should be drinking, because everyone is different in terms of their height, their weight, their physical utilization of all the water, how hot the environment is. But we know that when you have a cold, drinking enough water helps to thin the mucus, and that will then allow some of that mucus out, which is important. And going ahead and using saline nasal sprays like Serumar Congestion Relief is effective. It can be effective both day and night. It helps to remove some of that thick mucus and helps prevent secondary infection.
So I was actually, before we get on to other things, I was going to ask you the home remedy in your household.
So I'm a big believer in zinc, actually. So I've got a nice little stash of vitamin C and zinc. I don't usually take supplements other than vitamin D, which unfortunately we can't really get much from food. And in the UK, we don't have a huge amount of sun. But in terms of supplementation, usually I try and get as much of it from my diet as possible. But there is some evidence to show that if you take zinc and vitamin C within 24 to 48 hours of your cold developing, that you can reduce that duration and severity of the cold. So yes, we might not be able to stop the cold, but at least we can try and make it as pleasant as it can be.
Okay, so we've got a couple of home remedies there. What's the craziest home remedy you've heard of?
I hear a lot about putting onions in socks. I've had a few friends suggest it. I've seen it online. I see it everywhere. Onions in socks. And I don't know how that
works. Any peer review papers on that one?
I know, I should certainly try and find them if there aren't any, but I'm trying to understand how it might work and how it would diffuse from the sock to the nasal passages. God only knows. I don't know is my answer to that, but that's probably the craziest one I've heard.
Yeah, I'm not going to try that, actually. I'm not I'll do your vitamin, zinc, and D before, or C before I do that, I think. So the symptoms that kind of really upset people the most from all this is what? I mean, what really causes your life to be crummy when you've got a cough or a cold or even flu?
Well, this is the thing. When it comes to colds, it's, you know, there's nothing usually very severe happening, but it's those small things that actually can really affect your daily life. And the research has shown that, the Saramar conductor showed that actually people are losing significant amounts of sleep when they're when they've got colds. So 3/4 of Brits lose around 3 to 4 hours of rest every night. And one of the really interesting parts of that research that I saw that I thought was quite amusing as well is the effects on relationships. It showed that 1 in 6 have been banished to another room over a stuffy nose, but not just a spare room, but also the floor and the car is what some people said. And so I just imagine, you know, your partner's being banished to a car over something that seems so subtle and small, you know, a congested nose, but can actually really affect that relationship and that sleeping pattern.
Okay, so there's two possibilities here. Either we're all very intolerant, or there's something else going on. You know, so what if you got a bit of a blocked up nose? I mean, that doesn't really, you shouldn't be banished from the marital bedroom just because of that. You know, what can possibly be the problem?
Well, I think people find that the lack of sleep impacts not only kind of their physical health, but it also gives them less energy, makes them more irritable. They have negative impacts on their concentration and their professional performance. And so I think it's one of those things where sleep is the crux of a lot of our everyday activities and our quality of life. And so, yes, I hear what you're saying. It seems a bit harsh to banish someone to a car, and it seems like it's quite a big ask of someone. But I suppose when it's affecting such a variant part of, you know, a variation of your life, I suppose I understand. Not that I'm planning to do that to my husband anytime soon.
I'm, because essentially we're talking about snoring here, aren't we? And keeping the partner awake.
I think it's the snoring. It's the, you know, the tossing and turning, the not being able to get comfortable, the having, you know, the coughing because all of the nasal drip is dripping down the back of your throat, things like that.
Okay, so it's not just snoring. But certainly when it comes to snoring, A big problem is the fact that many of us are just overweight, and that causes us to snore. So if we get a cold as well, that just sort of pushes us over the snoring edge, I guess.
Yeah, there are lots of reasons that people snore. Absolutely, weight is one of them. Others can be, you know, issues with the septum, so a deviated septum, if you've had any injuries to your nose, if you've got polyps up there, and as well as colds and congestion, you know, including allergies and things like that. So I think for those that are just suffering with a cold and you know that that's going to get better in a week's time, that's one thing. But if you've got these chronic causes of congestion, I can understand why it would drive somebody pretty crazy if they're not getting their full 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night.
All right. So if we tried a few home remedies and we don't want to be kicked out of the marital bed and go and sleep in the car, What might we try? What's our next line of defence?
Right, so there are nasal sprays, so seawater nasal sprays that you can get from pharmacies, but you can also get other types of forms of steam inhalation. So you can add like eucalyptus or menthol into steam inhalation. There are also second line treatments, things like decongestants and steroid nasal sprays, but you've got to be more careful about the use of those because you can develop things like rebound congestion if you use them too frequently. So you do need to speak to the pharmacy about how you'd use those.
All right. Just then, you mentioned seawater nasal sprays. That sounds like you could just go cut to it and pour a glass of water and stick some salt in it and use that.
So Well, this is firstly seawater rather than table water. There is a difference there, but it's also about the exact concentration. So we're looking at whether something is hypertonic or isotonic, which essentially means the concentration of the salt within the spray, and how that then pulls the mucus out. So when something's hypertonic, the concentration of the spray versus the concentration within your own body, there's a deviation there. So it allows the mucus to be pulled out of the nasal mucosa, so the lining of the nose, and that can therefore help. So yes, I hear what you're saying about putting some salt into a glass, and that may very well help you, but in order to get those exact concentrations that work to actually pull the mucus out, it needs to be a slightly more exact science.
Does it? All right, but surely that's just going to depend what sea it comes from.
Well, the manufacturers will ensure the right amount of seawater the right amount of sea salt within the water. So they're not just taking it out.
They're not dipping it out of the Dead Sea then.
No. You don't want to find any little bits of little bit of seaweed in there or anything like that. It needs to be pretty clean.
Glad to hear it. Okay, so like, I mean, this is not, you know, the end of the world as we know it. But as we've discussed, it does upset a few people. It does kind of, in the short term, make people's lives less pleasant, I suppose. So if you're currently going through this and, you know, there must be something that can just help me. What's a good source to get some information?
Well, definitely go to sterimarnasal.co.uk for more information there. And also, as I say, visit your pharmacist, visit your GP if it's getting worse, and we can offer as much help as we can.
Good. All right. Dr. Sarah, thank you very much indeed for chatting.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show, and they were Dr. Juho Jokanen talking about immunology and leukemia, and then Dr. Sarah Kayat talking about coughs and colds and ways to avoid them. And thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.